Welcome to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast with your hosts, Richard Hill and Matthew Darlitz.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. My name is Matthew Darlitz, and I'm here with my managing editor, Richard Hill. Howdy, Richard.
Howdy do. And a very pleasant hello, because I've actually been up in your neck of the woods, totally not visiting you and saying hello, but been doing some mirroring hands and taking the curiosity approach to some corporate people, which was really great.
Yes, wonderful. And I love the stories that you bring back. And maybe we can share some of those stories a bit later. But first up, Richard.
Yes, let's stop talking about me.
Let's talk about some news and what's been happening in this interesting world of mental health and neuroscience and all.
Because something you picked up on, something that was really interesting, because that was one of the things I was going to tell you, is a paper I picked up on, and then there was a little bit of a television show that I was watching in Queensland while I was tired. Right. So I'll tell you about that. Let's do look at your one first, because that's really, okay. Really interesting. Well, both are interesting, but I'm interested in the one you're talking about.
Okay. Well, I started off actually looking at a piece of research that has come out of the Brain and Behavior Research Foundation, and that was fatty acid levels in the brain correlated with serotonin transport and depression. I don't want to talk about
you're
this
such study a, because you're such a light reader. Yeah.
It was a little bit beyond me, and it was a little bit confusing. It was talking about DHA and EPA, these omega-3 fatty acids and omega-6 fatty acids, and how they were finding the omega-6 fatty acids were kind of modulating the serotonin transporter function and had a correlation with depression. But at the end of the study, they said it's a very complex relationship. It's an inverse relationship with these omega-6 fatty acids.
Because I actually remember something about this a few years ago when I was studying the brain and mind sciences thing. Mm-hmm. And it was just again looking at this the relationship of why what we call the omega-6, which is really the animal fat type of fats, you know, the stuff you get in your beef and various things. Yeah. That's different from the omega-3, which is what you really get out of your fish and some of these, and what we call long chain and short chain, these long chain and short chain fatty acids, they're more complex than just the omega ones, which we know from Lorenzo's oil, going back into all that. But that the most important thing that I got from before, and if I'm, tell me what you think, but about this one, is it just confirms the fact that an imbalance of animal fats in the diet can actually increase our capacity to not be mentally well, to have it's a disadvantage to our mental state. So it's a part of what I was starting to talk the other day. We have an obesogenic society we can talk about where everything's designed to make us fat, but we almost have a kind of mental illnessogenic society in some ways, and this is one of the ways. What do you think of that?
A close correlation between what's happening with these fatty acids in our diet and our mental health. And so I thought, well, I'm not going to be able to explain this study from Brain and Behavior, but I went searching. I went looking for some more research to do with these fatty acids and mental health, and I came across this Dr. Patrick Nemechek. Now, I'm not sure if you're familiar with
name. I know the name, and I'm sure if I had a little look, but Nemechek is a sort of name that you can think, oh, I must know that because it's an unusual name. But tell me more about what he was.
Yeah, so I found this Dr. Nemechek, a very interesting bloke. Actually, he would be really interesting to have on the show, I think.
Oh, cool. We'll ask him.
Yes. And so I found a lot of stuff that he's talking about when it comes to autonomic dysfunction and metabolic inflammation. And so he's talking about the things that cause autonomic dysfunction, you know, is at the root of so much disease, but also, you know, mental health problems. And so things like head injury, concussion, right, and other physical traumas, emotional trauma, which does actual damage on a neurological level, metabolic injury, like medications, chemo, radiation, heat stroke, hypothermia, that sort of thing, inflammatory injury, you know, so when you've had surgery, adverse reactions to vaccines, different infections, stroke, autoimmune disorders, these sort of things.
And maybe diabetes too might be in there as well, yes, somewhere too, yeah.
Yep. Intestinal bacterial overgrowth, right?
Yeah.
Which, you know, when you have these bad bacteria in our gut, they send these signals to the brain, you know, that disrupt us.
Well, look, John Arden talked about that in the podcast we did with him, about the two different types of gut bacteria, the goodies and the baddies. Yeah, yeah, quite
absolutely. Absolutely. And all of these things contribute to what he's calling metabolic inflammation. Well, not what he calls metabolic inflammation, but what is metabolic inflammation.
Mm.
There's a lot of other compounding factors, such as diet and physical inactivity. A lot of the stuff that John Arden actually talks about, exposure to toxins.
In the seeds that he talked about,
yes,
which we've talked about more. Go and check out the articles on that. We've got those available in the Academy. Yeah,
absolutely. Excessive calorie consumption, this sort of thing. But the part that I was actually looking for is this balance with fatty acids. So the balance between omega-3 fatty acids and omega-6 fatty acids. So obviously the omega-3 fatty acids are the good ones, and the omega-6 are the bad ones, that they cause inflammation. Now, we need inflammation. It's part of our immune response, but we need a balance of what is, you know, there to cause inflammation and what's there to reduce inflammation.
Yeah, like everything, it needs to rise, but it also needs to recover. You know, the demand, the response, the recovery. Otherwise, we get chronic. And in the ancient days, of course, you had things too chronically, you just died. So so we haven't evolved good ways to manage chronic stuff.
Yeah.
So
metabolic inflammation. So what is that? He talks a lot about the central nervous system because, you know, he's a brain guy. He's into how this is affecting our mental health. So in the central nervous system, for example, you know, when there's cellular damage, surveillance microglia, they go through this permanent priming phase, and they morph into pro-inflammatory or M1 microglia.
Yeah, sorry to jump in because you told the good story, but that's exactly it. The microglia actually reduce in numbers when nothing's happening, and they can amplify 3 to 6 times within a very, very short space of time, minutes and hours. And so if you stimulate them, wow, off they go.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess, you know, the name surveillance microglia, they're on the lookout for damage. And so when they morph into these M1 microglia, they elevate the cytokines, the inflammatory response, the interleukin-1 and interleukin-6.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these will penetrate.
And tumor necrosis factor probably too, yeah, yeah.
Yes, yes. So they will penetrate the cells and activate some subcomponents within the cell, in particular something that's called NFKB or nuclear factor, CABA light chain enhancer of activated B cells. Now, that's not me being clever. That's me reading it because it's beyond me.
I actually know about it, but I can't remember it either.
All right. So this is part of a mechanism which controls transcription within the DNA.
Right.
Right. So it can turn on, you know, genes responsible for certain diseases. And so in a highly stressed state, you know, these can stress the DNA to such a state of mutation.
So
we can get this epigenetic response that if you're, you know, that can prime you for, you know, certain diseases. Yeah, so this metabolic inflammation is part of this epigenetic switching process to turn on if you have a predisposition to certain diseases and a lot of other negative effects like, you know, reducing hippocampal volume, general, you know, death of neurons within your central nervous system. So this out of control metabolic inflammation can be quite damaging.
I mean, there's an interesting thing, I think, and I think it's applicable broadly, that the body has a tendency, if there's 10 things, but they can only manage 6 of them, then they will just do the 6 most lethal or most likely to cause a great amount of damage and literally let the other ones fall off. You know, for example, we'll lose in cold circumstances, we'll lose our extremities, our fingers and toes. before the body says and to protect the guts. So you can imagine that when you've got these all this inflammatory process, there's a whole lot of susceptibilities being being put forward, that processes mm-hmm. that are actually bad for us and actually have very negative effects can slide through, can slide in under the radar, so to speak. And I might be being a bit crass about here, but the chance and the likelihood that there are some expressions of gene expression, some epigenetic processes that are being turned on and off that actually aren't good for us at all, can end up being produced because the body is too busy paying attention to things that are far more serious, or that they consider to be far more serious. So this whole metabolic overwhelm that I can imagine this is referring to is really disturbing, and a lot of it's due to lifestyle.
It is. A lot of it is due to lifestyle. Now, one of the interesting things that I found when I was looking through Dr. Nemechek's stuff was a number of case studies that he has. And in particular, I looked at one on some two guys that had PTSD. One was an older fellow who was 78 years old. He had served in the Korean War. And for 60 years, he had these violent recurring nightmares about the war. He was suffering from severe depression. He had bouts of alcoholism, and so he wasn't in a good way. And a second person in the study was a younger guy. He was in his mid-30s. He had been a mechanic in Afghanistan, but he had suffered for 11 years with frequent fits of rage and anger several times a week, which, of course, isn't good for trying to hold a job or keep a family together. And so he was really suffering as well. So what did Dr. Nemechek do? Well, he took them through, you know, what he's got a protocol that he uses. Basically what he did, he did a short course of antibiotics to try and get rid of the bad bacteria that was causing inflammation in the gut. And so this is this bacterial overgrowth in the gut that can happen.
Right, rebalancing this limit, that.
Yep, and this limits some of the, you know, those surveillance microglia from priming into the pro-inflammatory form,
mm-hmm.
right? Secondly, he used transcutaneous vagus nerve stimulation.
Under the skin stimulation of the vagus nerve, probably up around near the neck area, is that?
Yeah, so it's a little thing that clips onto the ear.
To the ear, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so, and apparently there's, I don't know a lot about it, but apparently there's some, you know, sort of direct access to the vagus nerve on certain parts of the ear. It's just sending a signal, and my understanding is that modulates the spleen, the liver, the intestines through the vagus nerve, right? And that helps reduce the inflammatory response.
And it's in a parasympathetic way, because the vagus,
that's right.
The vagus nerve has got a lot of parasympathetic. It has sympathetic as well. And mm-hmm. and that thing with the ear, see, a lot of those facial and socially active nerves that create the social expressions that we do, are actually stimulated because they come out from the skull at a very similar place to the vagus nerve. And so there's an interaction with it. And we've got a strong interrelationship through the ear, because one of the things that happens with positive vagal tone is an attenuation of the stapedius muscle in the ear to attune yourself to human speech. So
yeah,
I can see that. Others do it with vagus nerve stimulation, where they actually put an electrical stimulus into the vagus nerve, sort of in the neck. And there's a lot of argument about that. It's still being researched. But anyway, that's not surprising, because the vagus nerve comes out of the tenth just at the base of the skull, just around the ear level.
Yeah, yeah. So what he's trying to do is he's trying to balance this sympathetic-parasympathetic balance.
Yeah,
He uses heart rate variability, which we won't get into now, but that's a way to find the flexibility of the autonomic nervous system.
Stephen Porges and the HeartMath area have got lots of great research on that. Just sort of Google that. Yeah.
So he's doing this this vagal stimulation. He's doing DHA from fish oil, curcumin also. This is, again, helping these microglia, the M1 version of the microglia, from producing cytokines. He's got a protocol with these PTSD subjects. He used a high dose omega-3 fatty acids in a particular ratio of 2 to 1 of DHA to EPA.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I haven't looked into exactly why the particular ratio, but let's just say lots of omega-3s.
Yep.
And then olive oil. Olive oil, which is 70% this oleic acid. So it's an omega-9
yep.
fatty acid, and it blocks some of the omega-6 pro-inflammatory process. So the olive oil sort of, you know, stops that inflammatory process in its tracks. So that's part of it as well. So a couple of tablespoons of olive oil a day. And this collectively, you know, allows the neuronal system to repair itself and to get a rebalance of this autonomic nervous system. As I was just mentioning, Richard, before we sort of came on air, he's basically describing a Mediterranean diet what he's talking about.
Yeah, there is, and it's talking this balance. I mean, there's a few in there, and this is what I was saying before, the Lorenzo's oil stories, is it's not just threes and sixes, and there's various forms of long and short chains in the fatty acid repertoire, and the oleic acids are really important. We've mentioned all those. These are all great things that we're not going to cover in just the podcast. So, you know, please go and Google those, everybody, because they're absolutely fascinating. And I've actually a few things that I'm just recollecting because it's been a few years since I studied it. But good on you, Namacek. Brilliant stuff.
So the end result of doing this protocol, so the guy that was suffering for 60 years with PTSD symptoms, after 6 months, you know, his flashbacks were reduced from one a week to one a month. He was less depressed. He didn't have any headaches anymore. By 8 months, his PTSD symptoms were completely resolved. And the other fellow, the younger fellow, who recovered a lot more quickly, within two months, there was marked improvement. And within 5 months, there was a complete resolution of all of his symptoms, which was quite remarkable. And this is without any other psychotropic drugs or any other intervention.
It's a bit that thing I say so often, you know, given the appropriate conditions, the body will naturally organize itself towards well-being. Interestingly, what are the appropriate conditions? And we've heard it's often been said that the Mediterranean diet has has a lot of benefits. I remember when I was in Portugal, we'd have a lot of fish or very lean meats. They just bring out some very basic vegetables. We'd have boiled potato and beans and maybe some zucchini, a couple of things, and these fabulous fish. I'm there eating these amazing sardines, and I thought I was sort of really getting into the food, and I took off weight. So it was the nature of the thing, of the food that we were doing, but also I think what's important, and he may have mentioned this or it may be a part of his study, but he was looking at specifics, but it was the social engagement that was occurring during those meals as well, which was also reducing inflammation, that we know that positive social engagement reduces inflammation and increases both receptivity to some of the beneficial things like oxytocin, positive levels of serotonin and dopamine. So it's really very, very, very interesting. So so there's a study to really do this. What else have we got? You got any wrap up on that one?
So at the end of this, he sort of wraps it all up by saying, well, soldiers can really enhance their ability to heal their nervous systems by using portable vagus nerve stimulation kind of devices, but also changing basic things like the cooking oils that they use to prepare their food, taking daily supplements of fish oil and maybe some extra, you know, virgin olive oil, these sort of things. These are very simple things, but they can really enhance the body's ability to recover. So my basic understanding from all of this is increase your omega-3, you know, fish oils, especially high concentrations of DHA fish oil, you know, flaxseed oil, chia nuts, decrease omega-6. So, you know, soy oil, margarine shortening, corn oil, grapeseed oil, that sort of thing. Increase your olive oil, which is an omega-9 that blocks that production of pro-inflammatory cytokines. And like I just said, basically, we're following more a Mediterranean kind of diet.
Yeah, that's great, Matt. But here's a thing that's a little bit serendipitous, because you were talking about all this business, and in amongst all the things you're talking about, you dropped in the word concussions.
Yes, that's right. Yep.
because that's exactly the little topic that I was took a bit my interest.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And it took my interest because now, of course, this problem with concussions is called chronic traumatic encephalopathy.
Encephalopathy.
Which is, yep. Yeah. So you got your NKTP, and I've got that one, but CTE, which is really good. Now this is this problem with persistent concussions that occur particularly in what you might call tackle games, mm-hmm. or impact, you know, head impact games. And there was, of course, this famous film about that with Will Smith as playing Dr. Bennett Omalu, who mm-hmm. was the guy mm-hmm. who was an autopsy, brilliant guy.
Right.
And there was this guy, Mike Webster, who was a famous footballer, gridiron footballer, American footballer.
Yep.
And he was just doing these terrible behaviors, and he was just going nuts. What they found was there was this progression that people would sort of get headaches, they'd start to get a bit of memory loss, mm-hmm. they'd start to get a bit of this sort of alzheimic type of behaviours, and then they'd start to get dangerous behaviours and sometimes even schizoidal type of behaviours, and then they would die.
Right.
And they were dying relatively young. So this is a
film. So what was the name of the film?
Creatively called Concussions.
Concussions. Okay. And I'll have write that one down. I haven't seen that one.
Oh, good. So go have a look. It's a really good film. And there's all kinds of stuff. You see what happens when some medical person discovers something really interesting and then tells the existing money machine, the megalith,
right.
that actually it's probably a bad thing. So anyway, I won't say any more because you got to see the film.
Okay.
But it's talking about, so he actually was the one that persisted and discovered this, that it was actually something happened, because it ended up, there was another one that came up in the case. And so then he started studying some others and pulled together all this information. And then interestingly, when I was up in Queensland, there was a television, I was flipping through the television, it was Foxtel thing,
uh-huh.
and I came across the American thing, Fox and Friends,
right.
which I've heard a lot about in all this American politics going on.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem a little bit sort of simplistic and sort of great entertainment, I suppose. Anyway, so I just sort of stopped on it. And sure enough, it was a talk about brain concussions, being careful about concussions with kids.
Mm.
And what they'd done is someone had put out a commercial where they had 11-year-olds
mm-hmm.
playing this football and banging heads together, and then going in, and all the parents going, yeah, great, fantastic, you're all playing really well, then going into the dressing room and all lighting up big fat cigarettes and everybody saying, yeah, that's terrific, have a cigarette, this is really cool, to try and draw this
parallel,
so that people,
right.
it's as bad for you as that. This parallel of, it's not going to be just one concussion that's going to damage you, it's going to take a lot of stuff.
Right.
And you've got to really, just like cigarettes, you can't let them do it, and it builds up. So, the panel was, there were there was four people, one who had a reasonable case, and three people who were just really quite moronic. So anyway, so maybe Fox and Friends is not my image. But there's this great paper.
Can I just throw something in there? Because what I've just been talking about with Dr. Nemechek and his work, he has this graph, and one of the examples is concussion that he uses. And he shows like there might be a concussion, and there's sort of the graph goes down as there's neurological damage. And then as there is recovery, you come back up to the baseline of, you know, of health. But if you have continual concussions, and you don't give the nervous system enough time to recover, then the gap widens from that baseline of health. And so I'm imagining, and I'm we're in Australia, and, you know, kids play footy all the time, and you're being concussed repeatedly. If we don't give our nervous systems the time to recover, that inflammatory response get so great, and the distance between recovery and our system trying to, you know, cope with this inflammatory response gets so great that we then we get so far away from...
It begins to create damage.
That's right,
and,
yeah.
And Dr. Omalu actually came and said, not just concussions, mm-hmm. but just the constant banging.
Right,
because
okay.
a traumatic brain injury... it's difficult. The terminology, traumatic brain injury is an established terminology.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, sometimes we talk about a global traumatic brain injury.
Right.
And that's perhaps a little bit more colloquial type language. But what we mean by global is not so much where you get a traumatic event on the skull to such a point that that area of the brain directly below the traumatic event
is bruised,
is specifically damaged.
Mm-hmm.
What it is when there is a fast acceleration and sudden deceleration.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what you get is you get not necessarily the brain being traumatized by a blunt trauma, but there's this global trauma where the brain sloshes around in the cranium,
right,
and is literally traumatizing itself on the skull.
Mm, mm.
And if anybody's had a look at a skull, actually the bone that sort of separates and holds the shape of the temporal lobe on the sides of the brain.
Yeah.
If you've ever seen a skull inside, it's quite sharp,
mm.
and because it's not supposed to be sloshing around in a vehicle and so on and so forth.
And just a reminder too that the live brain is very soft, isn't it?
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
You know, we hold these models and we we have a look at, you know, brains that have been treated, you know, to be sliced up. But that's not an actual live brain is very, very soft.
Very, very sloppy, very sloshy. Yeah. So we've gone through quite a bit. Now, and what they were finding with this work. Now, there's two bits of thing. The general aspect of it is that one of the areas that they noticed happening in this damage they're talking about, that this is the trauma, the shock in mm-hmm. the brain, caused a breakdown of the process, the normal process of tau. Now tau is a binds to tubulin, and it stabilizes the microtubules.
Mm-hmm.
Microtubule fibrils
yep.
that go along the axon, and they move the vesicles. That's how the vesicles mm-hmm. That come from the cell body down into the presynaptic space. So that's how it all goes. Mm-hmm. And these microtubules form, transport, break up, and then reform. Mm-hmm. And it's this work of tau that does that. And
yep.
when that disorganizes and becomes disruptive and doesn't help to bind to the tubulin to stabilize the microtubules in the process, they collapse.
Mm.
And then you get what we call a neurofibrillary tangle.
Oh, okay.
Because you've got these and this neurofibrillary tangles. And those neurofibrillary tangles occur inside the mm-hmm. axon and mm-hmm. they get messy. They then destabilize the axon and the nerve dies.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And neurofibrillary tangles and an excess of amyloid beta tangles as mm-hmm. well, which is a separate thing,
mm-hmm.
is the sign of Alzheimer's.
It is, yes.
And that's the process of Alzheimer's. So what's happening is this this gap that you were talking about, describing there, of that the brain doesn't have a chance to recover
mm-hmm.
because of these constant bangs. Now, certainly a concussion is severe because it actually causes a loss of consciousness.
Yep.
But you don't have to lose consciousness with all traumas to the head.
Mm.
All you simply have to do is move the head forward very quickly, move it or move it in one way very quickly and either back very quickly or stop very quickly.
Yep.
As in whiplash, that can give you mm-hmm. a global trauma. You know, being tackled and hitting the ground or hitting someone straight on. So consciousness is not always lost. That's because you need areas of the back of the brain and the brain stem to be affected. So that's really interesting. So these guys published in the Annals of Neurology, Mez, and looks like quite a few Indian guys doing it. They looked at the duration of American football play that was required for chronic traumatic encephalopathy to occur.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what they found was that really interesting aspects. It takes a few years,
right,
for it to really take away. But if you've been playing football for 5.3 years, that doubles your likelihood of this disease, these symptoms of the disease to come in. If you've been playing only for 4.5 years, you're 10 times less likely to do it than those who've played longer. But if you've been playing for 14.5 years, you're 10 times more likely.
Right, right. I'm assuming they're meaning professional players who are playing all the time, right?
No.
Oh.
This is where the situation is, because professional players have an average game life of 3 to 5 years.
Okay.
So the average is about 3.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So they say, well, he's only been playing for a few years.
Mm.
But when did he start playing?
Yeah.
Probably when he was 8 or yep. 9 or 10. And this is why this commercial, which had the cigarettes, was with 10 and 11-year-olds.
Right.
So prepubescent kids saying, now, yeah, I know you're all going, but you're saying, well, he's never going to be a professional footballer and whatever. And they don't hit so hard that they don't get concussed once or twice. But it's actually that just banging of heads, mm-hmm, the fast action. You know that crazy thing you see in they're all hyped up and somebody scores a touchdown or
yep.
in our thing scores a try or something, and they come up and they smack them on the head.
Right, yes.
Good. That in itself is potentially enough to cause that recovery phase that was occurring from what might have been a concussion or a more serious event 3, 4, 5, 6 days or several weeks before.
Mm.
That slap on the head, that tackle, that sudden movement, even in things in the car where you have a sudden
yep.
braking,
yep.
they will all contribute to this expansion of the disease and the lack of recovery of the brain.
Mm. Mm.
So it's quite interesting in that they looked at quite a few guys, looked at a few hundred brains and things. And one of the things that they actually put in the paper, which I thought was quite interesting, along with all this indication of the sorts of things that are going on in the brain in this early, so it's early causing of Alzheimer's disease, of Alzheimer's symptoms, and then it actually causes brain atrophy. So that's why yeah. they eventually die. And they said, wow, there's so many people who play football.
Mm. Yeah.
And whether that's Australian, American, wherever, so many people who play these tackle sports.
Yeah.
How is this skewing our understanding of brains in autopsy?
Mm.
Because we're looking at brains and we're checking them out and we're trying and we're saying what's average and what's usual and what's common.
Mm.
But it was just interesting they commented on that.
Yeah.
So that must have been a sort of a side issue. But anyway, that was quite fascinating.
Interesting.
So, yeah, keep your head reasonably moving at the same speed and in the same direction, or quite still as best you can.
Yeah.
As best you can, because this lovely, beautiful, brilliant thing in there is just a bit of jelly and it will slosh around. And, of course, that's another, the encephalopathy
yep.
Is because we have the encephalon fluid around the outside of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And that's designed to protect us from general stuff. But you can imagine if you're a caveman,
yeah.
If cavemen, they never were cavemen, but, in sort of evolutionary history,
yep.
that we didn't have the sorts of speed of activity that accelerated the head's movement in such a way, or the sudden stopping. But I'm sure it probably happened back then too, because a hunter would have these sorts of things. But it was less prominent.
Yes,
less
probably not on a regular basis, like playing footy every afternoon.
Mm. Yeah, playing. That's right, and that's exactly right. Kids are actually in more danger. They're playing it every day.
Yeah, yeah.
Just for fun.
But it's such a big part of our culture. Isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I liked, when I was a kid, I liked playing soccer because I could kind of jump out of the way of people and my shins seemed to recover. And I kind of liked my head not getting whacked.
Right, right.
But I've got a friend who was a in the Australian, one of our Australian tackle game mm-hmm. teams. I don't want to reveal anything, and he's having funny stuff. He's having odd things happening. He's in his mid to late thirties now. Mm. Gave away the game. Was only a professional in the Australian team for 8 to 10 years, and. Yeah, he's going, yeah, that's odd. And I lose my temper suddenly. So again, this loss of prefrontal cortex to limbic restraint.
Yes.
And it's all to mm-hmm. do with this destabilization and atrophy of brain tissue.
Mm, very interesting. Well, sounds like our kids playing footy need to have more fish oil and be given time to recover.
Yeah, and that's what they do now. They do have the concussion rule where they're given a period of time that's based on the science of how long it takes the brain to return to homeostasis so that they don't get this thing. Whether they're doing it successfully or not, I don't know, but there was actually a program on Australian TV just the other day of on Four Corners, I think it was, is one of the program we have on our national television program, ABC. And it was about a bunch of guys who were losing their mental capacities and were just abandoned by all the sports bodies who were saying, it's not our fault, not our fault, not our fault.
Mm,
mm. So even now it's still complicated in some areas. And, Dr. Omalu, go see the film. It wasn't easy.
Yes, yes, definitely. I'm definitely going to go and see that film. That's one I didn't see. Do you know when it came out?
It's a few years ago now.
Years ago? Okay, yeah. I'll chase it up.
That's great.
Well, thanks, Richard.
Me, the brain guy, went off and went, ooh, brain's falling apart. Yeah, let's go see that.
Very good. All right. Yeah. Well, thanks for that, Richard. Shoot through the study and I'll put it in the show notes. Brilliant. And I'll put in the show notes Patrick Nemechek's stuff there as well. He's very interesting. Let's try and get him on the show. He's going to be fascinating to talk to.
Oh, I'd love to talk to him.
And, thanks, Richard. We'll keep chasing up the latest in research. Thanks, everybody, for dropping in and listening to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. We will catch you next time.
Okay, check into the website and check into all the goodies we've got. Mm. We'd love to have your support by becoming a subscriber. But it's not just support. You actually get a heap of valuable and useful information and education. But we're still here doing the podcast for as long as you're happy and enjoy being with us.
Absolutely.
So, bye from me.
Okay, see you later.
Thanks for listening to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. For more great science, go to thescienceofpsychotherapy.com.